Sales can go and sell $1 million a month. That's great. That's fine. But what puts money in a bank is the production department. They got to be like right with each other. That's your revenue. You got to constantly be building, you know, every single part of the company. As one's growing, the next one's got to grow with it.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Built to Win podcast. I am your co-host, Jonathan Weinberg, along with my other co-host, John Kolboska. And today we've got a really cool episode. We've got Stephen Pasulak coming back and visiting us again. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, guys.
It's been a little over a year since you were on the first time. So you're officially our first returning guest to the podcast. So that's really cool.
Okay. I feel special.
Stephen Pasulak from Lehigh Gap Exteriors.
Yes, thank you. From Lehigh Gap Exteriors. Well, I know last time we were talking about, you know, a lot of the progress that you had made and some of the big breakthroughs that you were hoping to achieve over the next year. So really excited to revisit that and see what's changed and see how things have progressed since the last time.
The synopsis of the last podcast was, I started learning things that I didn't know that I didn't know. And I started applying them. And early this year, kind of the same thing happened again. You know, I thought I knew what I was doing and I thought I knew all the answers and the tricks. And then I learned again that I didn't know what I didn't know. So it's been a change. It's probably the biggest change has been in my mindset of how I think about the business and the people, the symmetry between them, the numbers, how they all come together, how one thing affects the other. And it's very enlightening. I feel much freer. I feel a little weight off my shoulders because I understand it better now. And yeah, now it's just kind of getting managers in place and helping them grow and get better and managing them. So that's the new task here at the moment.
Yeah, I think the last time we were talking a lot about replacing yourself in all of the different roles and, you know, hiring people to take on those leadership spots. How has that gone over the last year?
It's gone really good. It's hard to find the perfect employee that knows everything. So you bring them in, you have to teach them, you have to train them. The problem that I have right now, and this I kind of came to a realization here over the past couple of days, is now I'm the problem. I'm involved with them too much. And I need to pull away and let them grow and manage and not feel like they have to rely on me or get my approval every single time. So that's like a personal thing that I have to be okay with. And I've come to grips with it, but I need to let them be free to grow and be the best version of themselves that they can be. I'm still here to help. I'm not going anywhere. I want to help, but I don't need to be injected into the day to day.
That's great. I mean, that's you growing too, Stephen, but let's talk about the positions specifically. What positions have you filled since we spoke to you last year? When we spoke last year, it was Stephen, right? So what's that look like? What did that look like at the beginning of this year when you and I had our conversation and then things really changed? And what did that look like today? So let's start with the beginning of the year.
Yeah. At the beginning of the year, you know, you have me up here as the, you know, the visionary. And then right below it, you know, you have me as the integrator, right? And then now you have all your departments right here. I have my office manager, Julie. She's still in that position. The position looks a little bit different now. We've got her some help to take the bookkeeping off of her plate.
So as the integrator, you were sitting and still are sitting in both roles. So like the GM, you're visionary and general manager. Okay, at Lehigh Gap. Okay.
On the admin side, you know, Julie, she's still sitting in the accounting, the finance, bookkeeping. She does have some help now. So now she's helping out to build out our customer care team. That way she can help manage the customer journey, you know, from beginning to end. That's been a new upgrade to her position, and it's going really well. It solves a lot of customer friction, complaints, concerns.
She was there at the beginning of the year, Stephen?
So that's, you know, the accounting and finance side of it. On the production side of it, when I started out at the beginning of the year, I had a production manager, but unfortunately I had to let him go because he wasn't a very good culture fit. So I kind of had to go into that role. But since the beginning of the year, I actually promoted from within. One of the girls that was here, actually, she had an interest. She kind of did it before, but not exactly the way we do it. So I promoted her into the production coordinator seat.
What position was she sitting at the beginning of this year? Because Tiffany is now your production manager, installation manager.
At the beginning of the year, she was in the call center. So she was just answering.
Call center.
She was in the call center. Yes.
My installation manager started in the call center. It's amazing how those things happen, right?
And again, that's kind of sometimes you have the right person, but they're in the wrong seat.
I'm going to say some things that people might not agree with, but you know, your installation manager, your project manager, whoever's running the whole production department, most of their tasks, believe it or not, are more admin related. So they're more office related, right? Coordinating, scheduling measures, installs, getting material ordered, you know, uploaded, ordered, checked. It's all typically right there, dealing with customer issues. Should they be in the field? Yes, they should when needed. But is that really a full-time thing? I don't think so. I know there's going to be some people that are sitting in there acting in that role as owners that are going to disagree with me. But you're looking into a company right now, Stephen, it's going to do $7 million top line this year from $4 million last year. So, you know, if you want to grow a business that works for you, it's one of the things you're going to have to accept. The point I'm making is you could promote someone out of a call center or from the office, get some SOPs and teach them and develop them how to lead and how to work in this position.
Yeah, I want to add to that. So, you know, earlier this year when I did have a production manager, before I had to let him go, he was always in the field. He was always out in the warehouse. He was always holding everybody's hand. And he wasn't really helping make things better. He was more or less enabling everyone to kind of stay exactly where they were. And what Tiffany has done is she has pushed responsibility down. You know, that those field tasks, those warehouse tasks, those are the responsibilities of our project managers who are managing the jobs and our subcontractors. You know, subcontractors, you can teach them how to meet a customer and say hello in the morning and have a safety meeting and review the project. You know, they can make a list of the materials they use for your input. Like, they can do a lot of things. You just need to show them how to do it.
And you need to hold them accountable.
So all these tasks that fell onto the production manager, you know, that really are their field tasks. They're for the people in the field. She pushed back on that and now they do it. And it works great.
It's interesting, Stephen, because the way you talk about that and pushing the responsibility down, holding the team accountable instead of, you know, kind of covering for everybody's mistakes. I wonder if that's kind of what you're thinking about now, still in your visionary seat, and how can you do more of that with your team? I probably do that a little bit too much and I don't push enough of that down to my team as well. So I'm wondering if that's something that you're thinking about for yourself.
You're talking about learning to delegate and elevate, right?
Delegate, exactly. And we're using a lot of EOS terms, right? For just in case anyone's not familiar with entrepreneurial operating system. We're talking about the visionary seat and the integrator seat and, you know, right person, right seat or wrong seat, et cetera. So these are some EOS types of terms, but, you know, you can kind of figure out what they mean if you're not familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely, you know, delegate and elevate. I'm definitely thinking a lot about that. You know, even more so, you know, on the plane ride home last night, I kind of all clicked to where it's like, aha, I need to empower the people below me, give them a few more tasks, and help them grow and get out of their way. That's easier said than done, but I've always been very willing to trust the people that I have working for me, that they're going to do a good job, because 98% of the time they do pretty good.
You have to accept that reality, right?
Because you're one person spread over 10, 20 different things. They're one person focusing on one thing. So once they kind of, you know, get a hold of things, they should end up doing better than you.
What I'm trying to do here in this episode, Jonathan, is because he's a returning guest. I want people to understand when he sat down with us last year, he was a much smaller company than he is today. He did grow significantly last year in 2025. You finished the year at 4.2 million.
Correct.
Yeah. This year you're trending 7.5.
Looking at mobility clients, well, 7.1.
Oh, is it 7.1 install or sales?
Sales.
All right. You installed 4.2 last year or you sold 4.2 last year?
We installed 4.2 last year.
But you're going to get about $7 million installed this year, correct?
We will. Tiffany's been doing a good job of building production capacity. The problem we had earlier this year.
Is that coming up again? Production capacity.
Production capacity. Yeah, because sales can go and sell $1 million a month. That's great. That's fine. But what puts money in a bank is the production department. If they can't keep up, you know, sales goes here, production, they got to be like right with each other. And so, yeah, if you don't have production capacity, I think this was the topic of the last episode, that's your revenue. That's what you get the keys. When a sale's just a liability. When it's done, now it's revenue. Now it's yours. So yeah, you gotta constantly be building, you know, every single part of the company. As one's growing, the next one's gotta grow with it.
You've grown significantly in the last 2 years. And this year specifically, 2026, you're putting up some big numbers. And I met Stephen last year. I just want to be able to show our listeners, like, if you focus and you do these things, this is possible for you too. So, you know, last year, 4.2 this year, trending at 7.1. That's tremendous growth. We just got back from this intensive. There's a bunch of people that are down this year. Like, a win is if you're even, right? There's a few people that are up, but those are the unicorns. But most people, right, are down
Most people have nothing good to say. You know, they got every excuse in the book.
Leads are down, closing rates down, revenues down, profits are down, right? Leads are more expensive. That's what you're hearing there, right? I think that's the reality of 2026. And Jonathan, I know we have another podcast coming out before this one. We spoke about that last week. For most people, it's been a tough year. But Stephen is up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
By doing a few key things. So last year, you were sitting in all the seats. Beginning of this year, you fired an installation manager, promoted Tiffany, who I've met. She's phenomenal. You're doing some things too to get her to understand how to maximize her production capacity. Why don't you talk about that?
You know, in production, you know, you're always thinking, I got these jobs to put through. I got jobs. I have a humongous backlog. Yeah, we're working through it. But I'm getting her to think in terms of, you know, revenue per crew per day, you know, a certain amount installed every week. So now when she's going and scheduling these jobs, it's not just playing Tetris of figuring out what can go in there. She's scheduling things to maximize the revenue coming in every single day.
You created the KPI for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was no KPI before.
Yeah.
Right? There was.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was no KPI. She now has something to aim for, right? She now understands what her job is to do every single day, every single week, every single month, right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Her goal is, you know, every single day, she needs to put $35,000 in install jobs and get them completed. Now, some of our jobs are one day, some of our jobs are a half day, some of our jobs might take a week. But again, when you kind of average it all out for the week, you know, we want to see that $35,000 go through every single day.
So she's installing by the numbers, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's filling up her calendar, her schedule based on the numbers, correct?
Yeah.
And the reason she can do that is because you've dove in your numbers and you understand what your material and your labor cost, right? You have these labor figures, right? So you can tell her, Tiffany, if you install X per day, you can schedule this confidently, right? So if I need $35,000 per day, but you only have $20,000 on the board for tomorrow, well, you need to go find another 15, correct? You're not going to typically have installers sitting there working overtime, right? Because you've done all the figuring of that out on the front end, right? Like what your labor cost should be, what your material cost should be. Now, that's not to say sometimes things don't happen, right? Where like unforeseen things pop up on a job and you do charge a customer a change order.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you do make it up, right?
Yep.
So, but talk about what was going on in that production department before the KPIs, right? What was going on with the installers? How were jobs getting scheduled? What was your revenue per day? Like, this is interesting. Yeah, Stephen, it's what they need to hear.
It was going on a feeling, emotions, maybe this installer, oh, this is too much work for me. I need less, you know, this, it's too tough for me. So we were letting
aiding this to the production manager, the actual installers.
Yeah. Yeah, the installers, it could have been the subcontractors.
Whose best interest did they have in mind, your company's or theirs?
Really, they didn't have anyone's interest in mind because they were dragging things out. In most cases, they get paid on a piece rate, percentage rate, whatever it is. So they were losing because they were, in essence, getting less per hour by doing this. So they didn't have their interest in mind, and they certainly didn't have our interest in mind. And so this was a big a big shift for everyone that we had working for us out in the field was this idea of, hey, we need to get a certain amount of revenue installed every single day. Some days you might fall a little short, but then tomorrow you have a bigger day, you make it up.
So you make it up.
Yep, you make it up.
So when Tiffany would sit down, because I worked with you guys on this, right? When Tiffany would sit down, she had all of this backlog of work to pick from, right? And this backlog was created because of this system that was in place, right? Because, David, you have a bunch of skilled labor available to you. You use mostly subcontractors,
yep.
Correct? Mm-hmm. 1099 subcontractors, but you do have some W-2 employees in-house for certain yep. services, right?
Yeah.
And this was widespread across all of them. So talk about what was happening to Tiffany when she would sit down. How was she figuring this out? Like, what did the schedule look like? Like, what did it look like before you made these changes to schedule based on a revenue number?
She was pretty much just taking a job and just putting it in for a day. You know, hey, Mrs. Smith, we're going to do her tomorrow. Bobby, we're going to do this Friday.
And what would happen if Mrs. Smith's job tomorrow, your employee showed up and it ran a little over to like maybe they had to stay till 6:30. What were they doing at 4 o'clock?
Oh my God, the installers at 4 o'clock, you'd look in the warehouse and they're already back. They're going home.
And what were they doing for Mrs. Smith's job that did not complete on that day?
In some cases, they didn't even tell Mrs. Smith. They would just leave.
So Mrs. Johnson's job that was scheduled for tomorrow, what happened to Mrs. Johnson's job tomorrow?
Well, Mrs. Johnson, she's ready. She's got cookies ready. She's excited for the guys to be there at 7:30. 7:30 comes and no one's there.
Because your production manager didn't call, right? Because what was the breakdown? Who failed to tell your production manager?
The installers.
We didn't finish today, right?
Yeah.
Simple stuff like this goes on in production departments. It's wild. It blows my mind, right? Inmates are running the asylum.
Well, the inmates are running the asylum.
John Weinberg, right?
Yeah.
So now what do we have? We have two upset customers, right?
Well, it's going to get worse because now you're behind for today. So now today is going to run into the next day. And so it creates this snowball.
It compounds.
It compounds, yeah.
And then what happens to Tiffany, the production manager, the install coordinates, the whole department? What do? They get gunshot, right? Now they have to find the day somewhere in the schedule to kind of have like a padded day, Jonathan Weinberg and listeners, to catch back up. And now you have a day where it's, in most cases, you have no revenue, but you've got a day because they're putting these buffer days in there because they can't reliably schedule with customers, right?
Yeah, there's a buffer day, or again, with that fear of the field team not getting things done, they're going to schedule a half day job today and a half day job tomorrow because they're afraid. They don't want to have to upset the customer now.
All this revenue, all this install revenue, he's selling. Listen, I met him, and we're going to get into it, his sales problem that he had originally when I went in to help him earlier this year. I believe it was, March, Stephen, when I went in to help you?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but it originally led with a sales problem, but he's selling. We fixed that. He's selling lots of jobs. He's not getting them installed on the back end. And I go in, and I'm like, talk to me about how you schedule. And you know, not her fault. This is the way she come in. This is the way everybody did it beforehand. There's no way to reliably schedule. So what did we tell Tiffany to do? What did we instruct her to say to the installers to fix this issue? Do you remember?
I think the part that I feel made the biggest change, but you might disagree. You can tell yours, was setting the expectation of, hey, this job's set for today. It needs to get done today. If you have to work late, this is part of the job. This is how this works. You need to get this done today. So if that means you have to stay an extra hour, it's fine. It's part of what you have to do. Because you know what? Maybe tomorrow you get done earlier and you'll have an earlier day tomorrow. But it needs to get done today. Even with our subcontractors, we started asking them, hey, you know, here's this house of siding. How many days is it going to take? You know, before we schedule it. And they'll say, hey, it's going to be 4, but it might go into 5. Okay. We'll pick 5 and we hold them to the 5, you know, because if not, it
gets so difficult. It finishes on time, scheduled time, right?
Yes.
Everybody understands this. There's an expectation. You cannot go by guesses. you have to have a very specific schedule, and then you have to track it by revenue. And how has your revenue and your backlog been going since you've implemented this? You implemented this probably about 40, 45 days ago, correct? 60 days ago?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how's it going?
It is not significantly better, unfortunately, because of holding people accountable. Not everyone wanted to stay on the team. Some had to get asked to leave. Some left on their own accord because they didn't like this accountability and being held to a schedule to get things done on time. We're not asking people to do anything special. This is just work a day. But a lot of people, they don't want to do that.
Those people that didn't want to do it, they no longer work for Lehigh Gap Exteriors, right?
They no longer work for us. And it's amazing.
Let them go work for your competitors, right?
Exactly.
Your competitors have those people, right?
Yeah. Well, what happens, you take all your players and you put them in the A, B, and C bucket, and the C is the cancer. Those were the cancer. They're gone now. And you have to get rid of them. So when they left, production actually got a little bit better.
With less people, you started doing bigger numbers. Isn't that amazing?
With less people. Now, we did hire another person to be a project manager out in the field, and we did hire some more contractors because we still needed more capacity.
But your new production, what do you call her? Installation manager? What is her position?
At the moment, her official title is production coordinator. Very soon here, I want to change that to production manager.
Okay, because that's why I keep calling her production coordinator. Yeah. But she is running your install department.
It's okay. She's like nailing the fence there.
You're doing it right. You didn't just award her the title. You're developing her. You're giving her small tasks. You're teaching her, correct? You're making her earn her position. She's, from what I've seen working with her, she looks like she's the fit, Stephen, from my experience. She's phenomenal. But again, you're doing it correctly, right? You're going in, you're helping, you're developing and stuff like that. So she's gone in and she's changed all of these things. And like I said, she's now doing more with less.
More with less.
And now the revenue has become more predictable. And now the last task you gave her is now, okay, we've got this backlog, which now she understands how to work through by scheduling properly. Now she's actually going out and she's hiring more subcontractors to increase your install capacity, right? Your production capacity.
Absolutely.
You had when we started this over $1 million backlog.
Yeah.
Where is it now?
It's at 1.3.
It's at 1.3 today.
We had an amazing sales month last month. So it really it added to it even more. We thought we were getting ahead of the ball and then, we just, it slowed again.
Well, you know what? So if you did not fix these production issues, you probably have a $1.6 million backlog.
The thing is, the rate that we're catching up on that backlog is improving. We were 12 weeks out, then we were 11.
You're talking about specifically siding. You're booking a lot of siding jobs in your market.
Yeah, we are booking a lot of siding jobs. Siding, windows and doors, they take a while too. Our time frame of getting this caught up is dwindling.
Just for context right there, okay? Yes, you're working on improving those backlogs, but you said you had a great sales month last month. Okay. So this is where I came in and I met you in March. It started with a conversation. And what was the issue that you were having? Without mentioning any names, but what was the issue you were having and what prompted you and I working together? What started with that? What was the conversation?
I had a sales manager problem. And, I kind of reached out to John for a little bit of guidance. The solution to the problem was he was the problem and he had to go. At the beginning of the year, I had a sales manager, and then I didn't. So again, going back to the org chart, I had to fill that role.
You're filling it right now?
Yeah, I'm currently filling in a sales manager. And that's a seat that's a hard one for me, but boy, am I learning. I am learning. And it is amazing. The one thing I never understood, and I fully understand it now, is sales really controls your cost of marketing. If they're not closing at a certain percentage, you are just bleeding cash because you spent so much money to invest in marketing and they're just pissing it out the window.
If you budget it or forecast it at the correct closing rate, it's okay. It's, for example, like the problem that I'm having this year and most people is I've historically had a 32% net closing rate, right? With price increases and a little bit of the tougher market, we're at 27% this year. So I've a 5% reduction in net closing rate. Well, that makes my forecasted marketing spend for the year at the 15% at a 32% closing rate, much more expensive, right? So I have to readjust my ad spend down dollar amount so I can bring those percentages within line, right? So you called me. I recommend exit your sales manager. And you did right away, very wisely, not just for the issues on the sales team, some other things that were going inside the business that could have caused you a major disruption. He did that. And then we just got to talking, but you asked me, hey, come down and help me.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're close. You're about 2 hours from my office. So I'll typically travel 2 hours. So I would decided I would come down for a few weeks and spend a day with you, right?
Absolutely.
And so we started diving into what's the first thing we discovered that the sales team was doing wrong.
They were over discounting contracts. You know, so we have a built-in 10% that we can move on.
Maximum 10%.
And you know, you'd be looking at a contract and you'd see 12%, 18%, 21%. And you know, this is salespeople's classic trick when they're scared of price. You know, they try to manipulate the price either by over discounting or underselling, you know, forgetting items.
And that too, also you had underselling too.
And nobody was really checking this. You know, my sales manager was pushing it through.
Sales manager that he let go. We discovered this after the fact. We didn't know this.
Yeah, because when you over discount, that money comes from somewhere. It comes right from the bottom line.
Because you built in a certain margin into your pricing formula. And listeners, Steven is not the cheap guy. Like Steven's margins, his pricing model is very aggressive. He's trying to land at like a 70% gross profit margin after labor and material, after discounts, after commissions, LMCs, probably somewhere in the 57, 58, 60% range. So he's priced
right.
He had his numbers dialed in. He understands what his material and labor costs are. He really does fully loaded because I went in, we looked at the numbers, but we discovered that Steven last year, although installing $4.2 million, he was missing about $600,000, $700,000 on the bottom line.
We did it. We earned it, but we gave it away.
We gave it away by?
Over discounting and underselling.
I looked at his P&L. I said, $4.2 million, where's the profit? And he's like, I don't know. And then we started looking at contracts, and guess what? That's the first place you go. That's usually where you find it, right? You find it. You find it in sales or you find it in production. That's got to be it, right? So I went to sales. I'm like, oh, here it is. And guys, most of you are doing it. And Steven was doing it up until this year. Taking the contracts from the sales reps and going, oh, thank you. Let me go measure and order this. Then they don't even look. The number's right there, especially 10%. I sell 50,000, 10% of that's 5,000. It wasn't 5,000. It'd be 6,200. He's losing 800, 1,000, 1,200, $2,000 on it. It's staring him right in the face. A round number like 10%. They're all looking past it in the office.
Yep.
All you got to do is just check every single contract. He does that now. He has somebody in his office. Every contract comes in. It is 10%. Yes. Okay. Approved. They approve it. Right?
Right here. Some sitting on my desk. There you go.
He writes the commission. Yeah. See the right discount lines up.
There's no one that's getting a deduction here.
If they do over discount beyond the 10%, what happens, Steve? What do you do to the sales rep?
So if they over discount or if they undersell, they pay for that. Right?
Dollar for dollar.
Dollar for dollar. This is retail. This is what the customer would have paid us. So again, real simple math, right? So if they give an extra 5% discount, right? That's not 5% coming off of their commission. So let's say they're getting 8% sales commission. That doesn't mean that they get free. They're actually more or less, that 5% is going to cost them maybe 6.4% because the company needs to get back up to the price it should have been. So it ends up costing them even more than what they think they're giving away because it's dollar for dollar. You know, if it should have been a $20,000 contract and they sold it for $19,000, they owe us $1,000.
You were paying, I believe you're paying a 10% commission, correct? You're paying a flat 10%?
Now we have a tier and it starts at 8.
There you go. Tiered and then, yeah, and they give away dollar for dollar. There's lots of ways to do that too. But at the end of the day, you have to build a pricing model that gets you a certain gross profit margin. You have to build in a floor price that you do not allow your sales reps to sell below. If they do, you have to double check it. If they do, they pay for it out of what? Their commission, right? doesn't affect your company. The margin stays the same. You have your margins. You're protecting your margins. Most of us are not doing this. For years, I didn't do it. For years, Stephen didn't do it. I came in, I showed him. How long does it take you to do that, Stephen? If they go and they sell five contracts tonight, right? They sell five jobs tonight, right? You get five contracts on your desk tomorrow?
Yeah.
How long does it take you to do the math, Stephen, on the five contracts?
Half a cup of coffee. That's it.
And by doing 5-10 minutes of work every single day,
yep,
you are now realizing how to save the $600,000-$700,000 you lost last year, right?
Absolutely.
One question I want to ask you here is that when you cut out the discounts, right, what happened to closing rates?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Changing pricing really doesn't affect closing rate that much. What affects the closing rate is the salesperson's mindset. If they think, oh no, no one's ever going to buy this, they're right. You know, but if they think, oh my God, this is great. This is what it's worth. I believe in this product and installation method, and I believe in the installers and my company. People are going to love this.
He has a good staff. He has a group of good people. He's added two more people. But the existing guys that I met, they're actually pretty good guys. They like the company. They're hard workers. They just had poor leadership, right? In place before we came in, obviously we exited the previous sales manager, right? I don't think it was a character thing. I think it was a skills thing. I think that nobody really showed them, or the sales manager was saying, hey, you can go beyond the previous sales manager, right? He has a pretty good sales staff. Do they need some work as far as developing their one call close skills? Because he was more of a two call close company. We're working with him on developing them into a one call close company. So it doesn't surprise me that when we actually started holding everybody accountable to the correct discount format,
mm-hmm.
that nothing changed.
Yeah.
They were just being a little lazy. They were taking the path of least resistance, right?
And they get dinged once or twice and they're not going to do it again.
Oh, correct that behavior like that.
And we talked about over discounting. That's really easy. You get the contract, boom, it's done. Sometimes you don't know if they're underselling things. So we created a measure tech position, and we measure our windows, doors, roofing, siding. Now, in my mind, a measure tech is not just remeasuring the job, right? Because they're going to go there and they're going to measure the job, make a material list. They're also measuring the customer and the customer's expectations. So sales rep was just in the home. You know, now it's 1, 2, 3 days later, and they're going out, they're measuring what we're doing versus what the customer's expecting. Because we would have the comments when the installers came of, well, the salesman said that you were going to do this or you were going to do that. So we made it very clear in the sales process and in the remeasure process to the homeowner that if it's not written down, it doesn't get done. So we want to make sure that we review our contract in detail
with the homeowner
to ensure that what their expectations are exactly what our team's going to deliver, because that contract is the Bible. Sometimes in that process of remeasuring the customer's expectations, you find out that the salesperson didn't sell enough, and the measure tech will sell it. You know, it's the additional work. They'll sell it. They'll get a little commission on that. But they're going to make sure that what we're doing now is including everything they wanted.
Sometimes you have a customer that does not agree.
Correct.
To additional charges because the sales rep left something off.
Correct.
How do you typically handle that? Do you cancel the job or do you ding the sales rep?
So that's the second part of it. Things that the customer agrees to is, hey, they were missed, or hey, I do want to add that. That's easy. You bill them for it right then and there. But the flip side is, the salesman missed something. We'll pick on windows. Well, it's five windows, but they only charge for four capping, right? They missed one capping. And the customer said, well, you know what? You're the expert. You should know. I'm not paying for it.
Otherwise, I'm going to cancel the job.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to cancel it. Or I
$15,000 project here.
Yeah.
For $300 in missed capping. You're not going to cancel the job, right?
No. And the thing is, too,
you're not going to pay for it either.
Yeah, because you don't want to make the customer upset. You want to keep a good experience, right? You want to make them happy and keep them happy. So in that case, if the salesperson misses something, it's very simple. If it was, let's just say, $300 to cap that window, the salesperson is going to pay the $300 out of their sales commission. So along with getting the contracts on my desk every day through Builder Prime, I have a little bucket that I have to manage in there. When that Measure Tech finishes his paperwork, it rolls into my bucket. We call it an over and under report. So it's just, was anything missed? You know, did you sell anything else? You know, that way I can look through there and know, hey, I have to take $300 off that salesperson's commission because he missed the capping. I'm not going to throw the job out. I'm not going to make an issue out of it. It's just no problem. The money's going to come from here and go over here.
But the accountability is there, right? And look, I don't want the listeners to think that you're just you're unreasonable. I mean, there are sometimes issues that come up that you can see where, like, how the sales rep may have missed. I'm sure sometimes you don't bill them for it. I mean, it's on a case by case basis. But when they miss something that's obvious, I'm sure you don't just take it off their commission check. I would imagine you're bringing them in the office. You're explaining why you're using it as a moment to teach. Correct.
Sometimes the project, you know, it goes all the way through production, and your margins are off, and you're like, what the heck's going on? And you have to go back and dive into it because maybe your pricing model's off. Maybe your waste factor's off.
You have three checks and balances here, right? Any company that's doing it well, they have three checks and balances. They check the contract, right? Like you do.
Check the contract.
They check the measure, right?
Measure.
Right? And then they check after the job, right? Sometimes something popped up. Maybe a little material was on the order. We didn't catch it. We had to make a couple of runs to Home Depot, whatever it may be, or the job dragged on a little longer than expected. But those are the ones, if they don't come in after the install, if they don't hit your COGS, right? Your cost of goods sold, right? Your production manager flags it, right? This is more than 30%. What happens? It goes to your desk, just like the contracts do, right? And then who goes and investigates it? You do, correct? What happened?
Yeah. So I'll investigate it. Sometimes I need to get, you know, someone from accounting or someone for production to understand what happened. You try to get to the root cause of it. You know, did we just straight up overproduce? You know, we did more work than we were supposed to because someone didn't read the contract.
You know what you typically find? You find two reasons for this because they hit my desk.
Yeah.
You find that something happened on the labor side, right? It ran over, right? I don't do change orders in my business, Stephen. You do. I don't. I tell the customer the price is the price. I look at it at the end and I figure it in, right? I look at it and I figure how much my unit is going to cost. I basically subsidize all the jobs. That's the reason why. But yep. I still look. I find labor, the reason for labor. Or the best part is I find hidden price increases that the manufacturers, you know, conveniently forgot to tell me about, although they said, well, we sent you an email, but it never came through. So, you know, think about that, right? If you check those jobs, if the COGS are not lining up, you have a process for looking, you can catch it right away. If you're not actively doing that, you can have a 7% price increase that you aren't aware of, you didn't adjust your pricing, hitting you for a year or two or three or forever. And how many of you are sitting out there right now complaining you're not making money and you've had multiple price increases without increasing your prices because the customer should pay for it? Right. And you are. And then you're sitting there at the end of the year going, why am I making any money? When you go to the accountant and they're like, you owe all this money. You're like, I didn't make anything. Well, because you don't have these things in place. You have to get these things. You have to know your numbers, guys. And now Stephen knows his numbers.
I'm getting significantly better at it. I still got work to do, but I'm getting significantly better.
These are lessons. This is why we brought Stephen back on, because these are the lessons. You know, he's been an excellent student this year. Right. I got to say that about you, Stephen. I'm proud of you. Honestly, proud of you. You meet a lot of people. You show them these things and very few people implement. And the one thing about Stephen, and I know he's going to be very successful, is because he's one of the few people that actually implement. Right. A lot of these people go to these shows, these events, these masterminds. They go in, they get pumped up for 2 or 3 days and they come back and they just get busy and they do nothing.
Yep.
Stephen has implemented major parts in his business in just the last 3 months of working with me in his business. This is just some of the things, right? What's the next thing that we discovered on the marketing side, Stephen? What did we do internally there? What did we change there?
Do we want to talk about the call center?
Yeah. What did we do? What did we do for you? Yeah.
John's business partner, they have a remote call center service that they offer. Man, let's talk to him about it. But anyway, what we did is we had an internal call center here. We had three people. and they would kind of just sit around and answer phones. They didn't really act as a call center. There was no KPIs. There was no urgency to fill the airplane seats, you know, fill the salesman's appointments for the day. We made the choice to discontinue the in-house and do it all virtually. And so they're still people. They're not AI agents. They're still people. We were able to take our hours from, you know, 7 to 4 Monday through Friday when it was convenient for us. And now we do it 8 to 8 every single day. So we're, you know, we make it convenient for our company.
Seven days a week.
So now we're available when people are available after work. So it was huge. But now we have a call center that has KPIs and they're driven and rewarded to fill the sales slots and not just fill them with junk, but fill them with good appointments. You know, 2 people present, they have a need that we could solve. And they're going to give us that 60 to 90 minute time commitment to be able to go there and actually try to help them. That was really huge. That was really huge. Because again, you can have all the marketing in the world. But if your call center is not performing well and following up on those leads coming in, again, speed to leads are very, very huge. This is a number I don't know. Wendy would know this, my marketing manager, but I believe we're like sub 1 minute on getting back to people. So form comes in, it's bam. I think Builder Prime actually helps us with some texting to make it even faster.
If it's not an in-out phone call, they submit a form on your website, a lead aggregator, anything. You get it come into Builder Prime. The minute Builder Prime receives the lead, Builder Prime instantaneously texts the customer, the phone number that's provided, and says, hey, thank you for reaching out to the Memo Tools, Lehigh Gap Exteriors. One of our representatives will be reaching out to you shortly. And as typically the customer's reading the text message, our call center is now calling, right? Now the call center, we have some software in the background that just doesn't have your phone number. It comes up on their caller ID that says Lehigh Gap Exterior. So they're like, text message, Lehigh Gap. Oh my God, right? So yeah. Within 1 minute, they get a text message and they get a phone call directly from the business when they submit. What do you think happens to contact rates? Right? And let's talk about your existing call center, right? You had 3 people in there.
I had 3 right? people.
Monday through Friday. Monday. 7 a.m. to 4:30, right? Yeah. Were they just answering phone calls?
They were mostly just waiting for the phone to ring. You know, on average, they might have made about 30 calls outbound every day. You know, and when we kind of went to them and said, hey, listen, you know, 30 isn't enough. It should be more like 200. They're like, this is impossible. We could never do this. And that's when you kind of realize you might have, you know, the wrong people, the wrong expectations were set.
You went from setting on average about how many appointments per week with your old call center?
So the old call center per week, so we were setting about 6 a day. So 6, that's what?
And that's only 5 days a week. So you were setting about 30 appointments a week.
Correct.
And we've been working with you now for about 6 weeks?
Yeah.
How many appointments are you setting a week on average now?
Now we have 5 sales reps. The goal is to give them 2 a day.
So we are hitting your sales capacity, correct?
We do not have any open sales appointments.
You have a 100% booking rate. If you have 5 sales reps available today, all 5 get 2 appointments booked for today, correct, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Before, that wasn't happening.
And Saturdays. So I'm gonna take this into sales a little bit. So as the call center, we had convenient hours for our employees, but not for our customers. We were doing the same thing on the sales side. We wanted the customer to meet during business hours, you know, 7 to 4, you know, we don't do that anymore. We're going to be available on the sales side when people are available. So we're running evening appointments, 6 o'clock appointments. We're running Saturday appointments.
He was not running evening appointments. He was like,
I remember when you were doing the same thing.
9 and 4. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we were working together, right? Yeah. So now we run evenings on the week, now weekends.
And Saturdays, yeah.
Saturdays. And eventually, he's going to transition into Sundays, too. Not yet. He doesn't have the sales team, the sales capacity to be able to handle that yet. But he's working on growing that.
2 appointments a day, 6 days a week? Or 2 appointments a day, 5 days a week, and it's just staggered for reps?
At the moment, it's 2 a day, 5 days. Saturdays, they've been alternating, and they'll have a day off during the week.
Okay.
So there are times where, you know, everybody wants to work on a Saturday. So we'll open up Saturday. So instead of just having 2 or 3 sales reps, we have 5 sales reps. Mm-hmm. So we can run some more appointments on those days.
So you went from 30 appointments set to per week to about 50, 60, something like that.
And then we go and we fill the calendar to 100% booking rate for whatever the, I mean, we communicate with Steven on his end with his coordinator, and they say, we have four reps available today, and we put the appointments on the calendar, and then they, you know, they distribute that appointment to a sales rep. If something falls off, we work our asses off. If something cancels before we work our asses off to refill that seat, we have like almost a 100% booking rate with you, where I think before it was like 60%.
It might have been worse than that. In a week, we probably were putting 25, maybe 30 appointments on the board. You know, now we're putting 50, close to 60 on the board. So
there's two things that happened for you here. Number one, you did let two of them go. You reassigned one into like your customer care, your concierge, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So you saved that money there.
Yes.
On the American side, right?
Uh-huh.
So, and now it kind of offsetted the cost, right?
Yep.
We've done that for you. We've given you more leads, right? So it doesn't cost you more money. It actually saved you some money, right? Yep. Now you have more leads, more sales reps. And then you mentioned earlier about last month's sales. What happened?
Huh. It was great. It was absolutely great. We did $796,000 in sales. That was
officially your first month on our marketing program, correct?
Yeah, that would have been the first like official full like everything's working month. Yeah. Yeah.
And your average before that was typically what were you selling a month before that?
380, 425, somewhere in there.
And we did not increase your marketing spend.
No.
Your marketing spend stayed the same, right?
That's correct.
So we just went in, we got more efficient.
Efficiency. Yeah. So efficiency on the marketing side is huge. Again, and you know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, closing rate for the sales rep. That's efficiency on the sales side. So if you can be more efficient on the marketing side, more efficient on the sales side, you don't need more leads. You just need to do better with them.
Do more with what you currently have. And you have a wonderful business. How long has Lehigh Gap been in business? It's like 20 years, correct?
Yeah, 20 years.
He has a massive database. I mean, you have like 30,000 people in your database. You have thousands of happy clients. Just, it's incredible. Steven has a really nice business. And now he's getting to be really efficient. And now he's going to start to make some real money. And he's a student. And you make sure, Steven, you make sure as you grow, you do the same thing that I did. You pay it forward. Help everybody. Yeah, you have to. It's just paying it forward. I've had people help me to get to where I am today. There's so much more to talk about. Maybe we should even just do a part two, because I mean, we only have an hour here, Weinberg. We're coming up on the hour. Maybe if Steven's available, we'll invite him back next week. We do a part two, because I feel like we only covered the half of it, correct?
No, we even talk about next year and where we're going from here.
I'd be up for it. Yeah, we got a lot more to tell.
Yeah, let's do that on the next episode.
Congratulations, Steven. It's incredible, right? Revenue's up. Costs are down. Profits are up. That's just wonderful to see. So congrats on all the success, and I'm sure it's going to continue. Thank you for being here with us again and sharing your story with the listeners. So many good ideas and insights and knowledge that was shared today, and looking forward to doing even more. So thanks so much for being here and for telling your story.
And everybody, do the thing. I've been getting a lot of feedback at the events and stuff. Weinberg, a lot of people really liking this podcast.
I know.
We're starting to build some momentum. I have people coming up to me and I'm like, you guys listen to this thing? So I want to thank you all for that. We're trying to be a little different, right? We're trying to do things a little bit differently. Sometimes we bring guests on and we may be a little tough with them. Try to talk about different things, right? But we're trying to be real, and we're trying to let you, the listeners here, see what it's really like to run one of these businesses, right? The pitfalls, the wins, not just the wins, right? You get a real insight to what it's actually like to be a contractor, whether you're wealthy or not. So do the thing, like, subscribe, share with your friends. Keep helping us build this podcast. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much, everybody.